60 to 90 seconds off immediate response times to 911 emergencies. In a business where life and death can be measured in minutes and seconds, this is a significant advance. But the greatest value is in how the same system enables the emergency medical technicians, EMTs, to give medical help to the injured or the sick, both while EMTs are en route and after they arrive on the scene. While the ambulance is on its way, the software walks the dispatcher through a series of questions to ask the caller about the emergency. The dispatcher downloads the answers to the crew while they're en route and advises the caller on appropriate first aid techniques pending the crew's arrival. The system even reminds the dispatcher to ask about the presence of a guard dog or other potential hazard to the crew at the scene. A new ambulance-based pen chart system running on Fujitsu laptops helps ensure that Acadian's EMTs follow standard treatment steps. The PC displays a schematic of the human body divided into 7 regions. The EMT taps on the schematic at the part of the body with a suspected problem. Based on whether it's a medical condition such as cardiac arrest or a trauma such as a puncture wound to the heart, the PC offers different treatment guidance. Replacing the paper reports the crews have used in the past, the pen chart system enables the ambulance crew to quickly create a new patient file. The system prompts for standard information, converts handwritten hospital names to text, and automatically completes the hospital address fields. If the victim is a subscriber to Acadian's monthly subscription program, the pen chart system populates the chart with medical information from records already loaded on the laptop's hard drive. Intravenous, IV, treatments and a few other procedures require a doctor to sign off when the ambulance reaches the hospital. The signature is obtained with a stylus in a special field on the PC display. If a new treatment is entered later, another signature by a doctor is required, ensuring medical review of all procedures. Once a report is completed, it is uploaded via remote access into Acadian's network. Encryption technology protects confidential patient information. The pen chart system reminds the crew every day about any files that are incomplete. If a file is not completed and uploaded within 5 days, a late report is automatically emailed to the crew's supervisor, who follows up. The pen chart system has improved the level of accuracy in reports from the 60% to the 90% range. Eventually, Acadian plans to integrate its information systems so that the initial entry of data by the EMTs will roll directly into accounting, and EMT hours entered into the pen chart will roll seamlessly into payroll. The same infrastructure will automatically coordinate training, EMT licensing, OSHA requirements, and the like, automatically requisition supplies for vehicles according to usage, and enable smarter maintenance of the vehicles themselves, which are the most expensive equipment that Acadian has. But these operational improvements are only part of the story. The data Acadian collects is helping the company to become even smarter with patient treatment. EMTs face the quandary of whether to establish an IV at the scene and delay departure to the hospital, or start for the hospital first, even though vehicle motion might make it harder to get an IV going. By analyzing data collected on the new Pentium-based PCs, Acadian learned that the success rate was identical either way. The company made en route IVs a standard procedure, cutting minutes off arrival time. Analysis of pen data also enabled Acadian to provide specific training to EMTs who had a low success rate with IVs or intubations, the insertion of a tube in a patient's throat to help breathing. Analysis also indicated that Acadian could stop carrying 2 types of medicine that invariably expired and were disposed of before they could be used. With the old paper reports, analysis of these issues and others was difficult at best. Even with shift commanders reviewing the tickets, it was impossible to spot any but the most obvious issues for follow-up, such as substantial delays or a rare major mistake by a crew. The 500 to 600 tickets a day simply piled up, useful only as historical records of individual cases, not for analyzing trends. Going forward, Acadian will have enough local data to understand and respond to almost any medical trend. The company won't have to wait for long-term national studies. Acadian and other ambulance services are also pursuing the next step, transferring digital data along with the patient to the receiving hospital. In Birmingham, Alabama, 10 local hospitals have begun to use TraumaNet, a software program that enables a paramedic to transmit basic patient data electronically from the ambulance. The data goes to a trauma communications center, which directs the ambulance to whichever hospital has the appropriate emergency treatment available and sends the patient data to the hospital so that the hospital can prepare for the patient's arrival. Ultimately, the goal is to use digital systems to provide a holistic picture of the patient's status by the time the ambulance pulls up to the emergency room doors. capturing the complete digital record for patients. Once in the hospital, a patient benefits from information systems that provide the medical staff with more information about the patient's history, capture the details of care to date, and relieve doctors and nurses of excessive paperwork so they can spend more time focusing on the patient. A good illustration of how a hospital can integrate all this patient information is found at Children's Hospital and Regional Medical Center in Seattle. Children's Hospital is a 208-bed, nonprofit pediatric hospital affiliated with the University of Washington School of Medicine. The hospital has 180 hospital-based physicians and 100 residents at the hospital, plus another 240 residents who rotate in from other programs. Affiliated with more than 50 outpatient specialty clinics in Alaska, Idaho, Montana, Washington, and Wyoming, Children's also takes pediatric referrals from those five states. When a patient is admitted, all identifying information is entered once into a PC and stored in a central database. More than 1,500 PCs are stationed throughout the hospital, on every floor, in every department, and in close proximity to every bedside. Whenever anyone in the hospital interacts with the patient, the encounter is entered into the same database. Any staff member, even a clinician at one of Children's off-site specialty and outpatient clinics, can tap into this information. If a nurse needs to notify a doctor about a patient's status, she can page the doctor, and he can log on to a PC at the hospital or remotely through a dial-up connection and review the patient's condition. Every treatment, test, medication, and procedure administered at Children's is entered into CareVision, a patient information management system from HealthVision Corporation. A CareVision file gives the hospital a complete digital record of the patient and what the hospital has done for him. Developed in coordination with Children's clinicians, who worked along with the IT staff as part of the project team, the CareVision system can capture data as minute as how often a nurse visits a patient, turns her in her bed, or gives her a bath. A physician can click on a patient name to review the record, drilling down to as much detail as needed. All lab reports and other information that were once part of the 100 pages per week per patient paper flow are now stored digitally in a database. Everything is captured electronically so that the hospital has a complete, instantly available picture of every time and every way the hospital touches the patient. Soon the hospital will add a decision support module to alert medical staff in real time to treatment conflicts and duplications. For example, upon entering a drug order for a child, a physician might be alerted by the system that the medication interacts adversely with another drug the child is receiving, or that the child is allergic to the drug. Or the doctor might order an X-ray, and the system will say, "We just ordered an X-ray yesterday. Do you really want another one?" As Acadian Ambulance analyzes its data to identify trends and develop appropriate emergency treatments, Children's uses its system to develop best practices in caring for patients. The industry term for this is clinical pathways, and it means defining optimum courses of care for specific maladies. Most hospitals have always had clinical pathways for treating certain illnesses, but they were paper-based and often ended up on a shelf where few people could access and use them. Even when they were used, paper-based pathways made it difficult to collect and evaluate data for improvement. At Children's, care data is captured automatically, giving pathway teams ways to track trends and build even better pathways. The teams then program new standard paths into the CareVision system and push them to doctors at the bedside, where they're administering treatment. When a physician prescribes a certain drug or treatment, the system double-checks whether the prescription is compatible with the hospital's pathway for that problem. The system alerts doctors to new procedures they might otherwise overlook. This ability to sift through data to develop better medical practices is especially important to Children's Hospital in its capacity as a teaching organization. To assist residents and students, CareVision will contain pre-selected orders that follow the hospital's current best practice guidelines. If the resident is not familiar with the order set, the system can email background information to the resident for later reading. The online references will contain the latest data explaining the pros and cons, in terms of cost and effectiveness, of different treatments. If a resident places an inappropriate order, CareVision will prevent the order from going through, send additional information to the resident as to why the order was stopped, and possibly alert the attending physician to areas where the resident may need more training. Integration of the new system with the legacy billing system at Children's protects the hospital's investment in existing technology, and the new system meets stringent patient confidentiality and security criteria. The system makes it easier to get reimbursed, since extensive documentation is available to insurance providers. Because the system captures all patient care data digitally, the hospital has the ability to run audit trails and produce extensive management reports. Because the system is standards-based, Children's will be able to modify or augment it in just about any direction it wants. Children's plans to incorporate digital imaging into its system so that doctors will be able to review images of patient problems from wherever they are. Children's knew that implementing a world-class information system focused on patient care would take time, cost money, and involve a few surprises. But Children's also realized that the cost and the risk of not making the change to a digital system was far greater. Yes, it's expensive. No, it's not as easy as it should be. And yes, it's taking us a while to roll this thing out, John Dwight, Children's Chief Information Officer, says. But we really do not have an option. Hospitals simply will not be able to survive in today's healthcare world unless they invest in digital information systems that let them track and analyze care data. It's do a better job of tracking our care or go out of business. Providing ongoing care. PC and web technology benefit patient care not only in hospitals, but also in daily clinical practice. Centara Healthcare Systems of Norfolk, Virginia, a healthcare provider in Southern Virginia and Northern North Carolina, is using the internet to put doctors in touch with patients, whether the patients are in the hospital or at home receiving ongoing treatment. Centara has created an intranet-based application called SpinWeb that provides its network of 2,000 physicians and 5,000 office staff with instant access to patient records and other hospital information systems over the web. Doctors dial into Centara's PC servers from their offices or homes to check patients' current medical status and to read lab reports, patient discharge summaries, other patient news, medical reference materials, and insurance information. A surgeon might dial in the night before surgery to check on a patient's condition. SpinWeb also enables a doctor to review, edit, and electronically sign patient documents via a PC from a remote location. Email enables communication among physicians and between Centara and physicians. These capabilities save a doctor from having to drive to the hospital, often from a rural area, every time a routine step in a patient's treatment is completed. It also saves the administrative burden in disseminating all the paperwork. For a large category of high-risk patients, such as individuals with diabetes, Centara provides disease management education and daily monitoring. Today, caseworkers do preventive checkups with these patients on a daily basis, sometimes multiple times a day, checking blood sugar levels and other critical indicators. Using SpinWeb, the patient will soon be able to log onto the internet and enter her own daily reports that will go to both the caseworker and her physician. The SpinWeb application will be able to make preliminary patient recommendations on its own. If the patient's blood sugar is below a certain level, SpinWeb might instruct her to drink a glass of orange juice. Otherwise, the caseworker and the physician can provide proactive and preventive care for the patient from any location. SpinWeb will also enable Centara to gather trend information. In a diabetes case, it could become clear that the patient's blood sugar level is high every day around 4 p.m., prompting the physician to recommend a change in diet. Internet-based applications such as SpinWeb are broadening information access to the many rural physicians and patients Centara serves. When a patient is referred to a specialist in a nearby city, the hometown doctor can follow the patient's condition via posted reports on the SpinWeb site. Before too long, if a patient needs medical treatment away from the area, SpinWeb will provide the patient's medical records online for any other medical team with proper authorization. A Centara emergency health card will have a toll-free telephone number that another medical facility can call to get access to the Centara website. Within minutes, the remote medical team will know as much about the patient's medical history as the local doctor. Tracking unseen medical dangers. In addition to improving both immediate care and ongoing doctor-patient dialogue, information technology can yield answers for improving care through the longer-term capture and analysis of symptoms, illnesses, and treatment. The U.S. Air Force is a leader in using data gathering and analysis to monitor and protect its forces overseas from medical dangers. A number of American service personnel returning from both the Vietnam War and the Persian Gulf War complained of maladies that doctors couldn't figure out. Vietnam veterans believed their ailments were caused by exposure to Agent Orange, an herbicide used by the United States to defoliate vegetation. Speculation on the cause of Gulf War syndrome has ranged from oil fume inhalation to delayed reactions to vaccines to possible exposure to Iraqi chemical weapons. Adding to the confusion, at least one study claims that the number of unusual illnesses reported by Gulf veterans is no higher than the number reported by soldiers who did not serve in the combat zone. Without the consistent tracking of symptoms in the field and later, and of events that might have caused the symptoms, no one can say with certainty whether such illnesses were war-related or what the causes were. After concerns about a possible Gulf War illness became serious in the mid-1990s, Brigadier General Klaus Schaefer, Chief Medical Officer of the U.S. Air Force's Air Combat Command, made a decision. "I'm not about to let Agent Orange or Gulf War syndrome happen to my people. I want to know what environment I'm putting them into and what is happening to them." General Schaefer went to the official Department of Defense medical establishment, the Military Health Service, MHS, and asked for help in developing a digital, field-deployable clinical records system that would enable him to gather health-related data on the environments his people were going into. Although the MHS thought such a system was a great idea, MHS said it would be 2 to 3 years before that organization had the capability to help develop one. That wasn't soon enough. General Schaefer and his top information systems officer, Lieutenant Colonel Edward Klein, along with a group of technical experts, turned to off-the-shelf PC software, mobile computers, and low-cost servers. The goal was to track and analyze what the military calls disease non-battle injuries, a broad category that covers health problems other than injuries incurred in battle. The result was an application called Desert Care, which enables the Air Force to precisely diagnose illnesses and see illness trends area-wide. In tracking the welfare of troops, Desert Care can also uncover possible unseen health-endangering activities of the enemy. From start to finish, development took about 4 months and cost a mere $200,000. Today, Desert Care is deployed in Southwest Asia, the Persian Gulf, and the Middle East, supporting the Air Force's 28,000 people who rotate through there annually. Within a year, Desert Care could be institutionalized throughout the Air Force, in all of its hostile theaters, providing medical intelligence on thousands more individuals and dozens more environments. The U.S. Army and Navy are interested in adopting Desert Care in their own theaters, so its impact may widen. Protecting individuals and the entire force. Before Desert Care, one service person's ailment would be just an isolated symptom in the middle of nowhere. The ailment would be dosed with medicine, recorded on a paper-based system, and forgotten. Now, when an Air Force doctor treats service personnel, she also enters the data into a mobile computer. This information is emailed back to the United States daily, where it's merged with reports arriving from elsewhere in the theater. Several teams of university and military statisticians in the United States analyze the data to establish norms, build a bigger picture of what's going on medically, and watch for any patterns of sickness to emerge. If other people on the same base or within, say, a 300-mile radius report similar symptoms, the Air Force knows about those cases right away and can respond. The goal is to provide force protection, to enable the military to respond quickly to a chemical or biological attack. Desert Care proved itself quickly, although in mundane fashion, by picking up on a pattern of sick calls that indicated a slide in food sanitation standards at a particular base kitchen. Without digital assistance, it might have taken the Air Force weeks to realize that there was a problem and institute tighter hygiene. Desert Care also establishes a great deal of baseline data that will be useful in treating service people after they return home. Suppose a serviceman walks into Andrews Air Force Base Medical Center in Maryland a year or two after returning from Kuwait and reports intermittent bouts of dizziness and depression. Doctors will be able to consult the data and find out what was going on in the area during his service there. Did anyone suffer those symptoms while in Kuwait? Are other veterans suffering similar symptoms now? Did the serviceman receive an anthrax vaccination before he was sent to Kuwait? If any event can be correlated with these symptoms or similar problems at a certain time or place, Desert Care gives doctors the best opportunity to find out. General Schaefer plans to make the system even more powerful for spotting area-wide medical problems. When they become commercially available, he plans to introduce handheld DNA probes that will enable medical personnel to make on-the-spot diagnoses of bacteria or viruses through blood and urine samples. Desert Care will then become a field treatment tool as well as a diagnostic tool. Field physicians and medics will also be equipped with digital cameras to take photos of skin lesions or other symptoms, and they'll incorporate the photos into the overall electronic health record for either stateside diagnostic assistance or retrospective case review. This tracking of long-term medical trends for widely scattered military personnel provides a good template for civilian applications. With digital records, we'll be able to study illnesses in a variety of population groups to help discover long-term correlations in environment, genetic predisposition, age, and gender, without having to institute specialized studies. At least one hospital in the American Midwest is experimenting with long-term tracking of patient populations to determine what treatments are most effective in preventing more serious complaints. Evolving a complete healthcare system. Imagine you had a healthcare system in your local community built on the components I've described. An intelligent, adaptive emergency system gets you to the hospital quickly, and all critical information on your medical history and the current medical situation feeds immediately into the hospital's computers. A doctor uses a touchscreen, keyboard, pen, or, fairly soon, voice recognition system to order your treatment. Digital instructions are fired off to the labs and the pharmacy. PC-based instruments post lab results electronically. These and other reports are online for easy review by any physician, on-site or off. Alerts automatically pop up for any potential treatment conflicts or deviations from the approved clinical pathway. Inventory and billing are handled automatically. Transaction processing systems detect fraud or unusual use and, over time, learn appropriate countermeasures. Instead of spending half their time on paperwork, doctors and nurses spend virtually all their time treating you and their other patients. Test results and bills reach you in simple, understandable language. All your treatment and medication information is evaluated automatically over the longer term to help prevent adverse reactions. Your follow-up care is also scheduled automatically. You research medical information on the internet and have more informed and engaged interactions with caregivers, whether you communicate with them over the internet via email or you go in for an appointment. You use email to ask routine questions of your health giver and to receive reminders about ongoing health programs or medication that's about to expire. When you change health plans, all your medical history goes with you instead of being lost or trailing after you several months later. It stays with you throughout your life. Doctors use your history to identify trends in blood pressure, cholesterol levels, and other factors to look for patterns that might reveal a serious developing problem. Systematic medical analysis of the whole community alerts authorities to any alarming public health trends much sooner and more accurately than has been possible before. If healthcare communities take an approach based on PC and web technologies, such capabilities do not have to be outrageously expensive. Estimates for creating an integrated patient data system involving doctors, hospitals, and managed care providers vary widely. Medicine and Health magazine estimates the cost for a large hospital, health maintenance organization, or other health system at between $5 million and $50 million annually during the startup phase. The high-side estimates presuppose the continued use of incompatible systems, the use of highly specialized diagnostic equipment, and the continuing development of medical systems as huge, monolithic projects. PCs enable a step-by-step approach using more off-the-shelf software. The examples of patient data systems in this chapter, all developed independently, together cover most aspects of short-term and long-term medical treatment. Because they were all built on the PC platform, they would be simple to link without expensive systems integration. PCs are also now being used as the front end of specialized devices such as ultrasound, body scanners, and blood and tissue analyzers, reducing their costs and enabling integration of their data. PCs are powerful enough to handle hundreds of thousands of claims per hour or heavy query loads into patient records. PCs can tie into existing back-end systems if health organizations need them to. All told, the applications described in this chapter, if implemented as a single solution, would cost less than the $5 million figure cited by Medicine and Health. This is not a trivial amount of money, but it is minor compared with the amount most health organizations spend for paper-based transactions and standalone computer applications today. With paperwork making up 20 to 40% of the $1 trillion plus per year revenues of the U.S. healthcare industry, the current overhead runs $200 billion to $400 billion annually, more than the gross national product of many countries. Today, the lack of information systems in doctors' offices represents the biggest obstacle to improving patient care. Only about 5% of physician practices in the United States use computer systems in their clinical work. Computerizing a doctor's office will cost from $10,000 to $50,000 for each one, but doctors can quickly recover the costs. A five-physician clinic in Hammond, Louisiana, invested about $50,000 in PC patient systems that made data entry easy for doctors. The clinic saved $60,000 the first year in transcription costs alone. Because of inertia, it will take a big commitment by healthcare providers to reshape healthcare through digital information. The technology is available today. An investment in a common infrastructure and tools will enable not just a huge reduction in costs, but better health treatment for everyone. Change will be driven by two groups: knowledgeable patients who insist on more information and more involvement in their own health, and internet-savvy health professionals who use these new tools to provide better care. Together, they'll use a digital nervous system to turn the islands of healthcare into a single continent of integrated care. Distance medicine to improve treatment, training. PC-based video technologies are also changing the face of medicine. Acadian Ambulance plans to link onshore doctors by PC-based TV to more than 100 emergency medical technicians already on oil platforms in the Gulf of Mexico. Telemedicine should improve both diagnosis and on-site treatment, eliminating many of the emergency helicopter flights that cost oil companies between $4,000 and $12,000 for each trip. Australian state governments use telemedicine to provide care to remote areas of Australia and even to other areas of Southeast Asia. Malaysia plans to use the PC-based TV technology as the basis of a telehealth program throughout the country. The goal is to provide not simply acute care, but lifelong prevention programs to help its citizens avoid the heart disease and other lifestyle-related illnesses that have become common in the West. Columbia HCA in the United States is using internet-based video to provide medical training to physicians, becoming the first hospital to do a heart operation live over the internet. The doctors demonstrated surgical techniques over the video, and an accompanying slide presentation provided technical details. The video can be replayed at any time, so that surgeons at all of Columbia's clinics and hospitals can gain exposure to advanced techniques that would otherwise not be available to them. The internet is also being used to broadcast important medical conferences for people who can't attend in person. The first broadcasts, in the spring of 1998, were of a pair of Johns Hopkins conferences on clinical care and issues for patients with HIV. Thousands of online participants sent positive feedback, encouraging Johns Hopkins to schedule video coverage of several upcoming AIDS conferences, one of which will be broadcast in three languages, as well as other conferences. Business lessons. The web lifestyle enables patients to find out more about their health and take more responsibility for it. The web lifestyle provides a new way for patients and doctors to communicate. Managed care has provided the economic impetus to extend information systems into clinical practice, but the real benefit of digital systems is improved patient care. Digital systems provide a way to create a holistic picture of a patient's health status and needs through the entire cycle of care: emergency services, hospital care, maintenance, and trend analysis. Diagnosing your digital nervous system. Are you designing your medical systems with the idea of patient data flowing seamlessly from emergency services to hospital to doctor? Do digital systems enable your professionals to spend less time on paperwork and more time with patients? Do your digital systems support doctors in their medical decision-making? Can you easily provide patient data to another medical facility if your patient needs medical care away from home? Are you preparing for the day in the near future when patients insist on communicating over the web? Chapter 20. Take Government to the People. We must empower citizens to act for themselves without having to go through a bureaucracy. This is sometimes hard for the bureaucracy to understand. Government agencies have to think of themselves as a resource to citizens and not as an office regulating citizens. But guess what? It's fun to help citizens solve their problems. Bill Lindner, Secretary, Department of Management Services, State of Florida. Government, perhaps more than any other organization, can benefit from the efficiencies and improved service that stem from digital processes. Developed nations will lead the way, creating paperless processes to reduce bureaucracy. Developing nations will be able to provide new services without ever having to deal with cumbersome paper methods. Yet most governments are far behind business in using the tools of the digital age. Businesses going digital are stuck with many paper forms because governments are not yet online. The reason for this lag is not a lack of money so much as a lack of organizational focus. Because government processes are paper and people intensive, streamlining in the past meant a reduction in service. It's not uncommon for legislatures to forbid agencies to close any offices, which simply forces them to struggle to do more with less. At the same time, there are few metrics to create economic or motivational incentives to provide better service. Citizens can't take their business to another tax agency or licensing bureau. Government agencies end up focused on their own internal organizational needs and narrow charter rather than the broad needs of citizens and businesses. As an example, consider the paperwork involved in hiring a household worker in the United States. The employer has to know that 5 agencies are involved, each with its own set of forms. This complexity, more than a desire to avoid paying the taxes, explains why compliance with all the rules is low. In this and many other cases, government, to the average citizen or business, remains an intimidating knot of uncoordinated agencies and regulations. Yet digital processes and the web lifestyle give government the opportunity to reinvent itself around constituents rather than the bureaucracy. Governments can take 5 major steps to help make the digital age a reality in their countries. The first 2 involve improving government services. The last 3 involve creating an infrastructure so that a country's businesses can compete in the digital age. 1. Put government employees on email and eliminate paper filing. Make sure that all information being shared inside government is digital. 2. Put government services online with an interface designed for the user. Publish everything on the Internet. 3. Attract investment by technology companies and encourage electronic commerce, sometimes with financial incentives, but more often with cooperative projects. Create a framework for electronic authentication of businesses and citizens. 4. Deregulate telecommunications and encourage major investments in the telecommunications infrastructure. 5. Lift the skills of citizens by using technology as part of education and training systems at all levels, discussed in Chapter 22. Replacing paper flow with digital publishing. Just as businesses can make better use of productivity tools and email to get far more benefits from technology investments, so too can government. In developed nations, many government employees and public officials already have PCs on their desks, and developing nations can put in a PC infrastructure for a modest cost. The use of email alone promotes interagency cooperation and enables public officials to be more responsive. Some U.S. legislators are beginning to use email to stay in touch with constituents, for instance, and Australia's National Parliament is using digital workflow to ensure follow-up on inquiries from constituents. Governments need to establish policies to use digital information flow in place of paper. Internet publishing should become the default. Printed documents should be the exception, not the rule. The savings would be immense. The U.S. government alone spends $1 billion annually printing documents that are already available on the web. Most copies of these documents, 30 million copies of the Federal Register, 1 million copies of hearings reports, and 65,000 copies of the President's budget, are for public officials whose offices are already online. Most of the printed copies end up in trash bins in the nation's capital. Another example, by publishing state employee phone numbers, mailing addresses, and building locations online, Florida saves $295,000 in printing and distribution costs annually and eliminates a 30% error rate caused by personnel changes that can't be reflected in an annual paper phone book. Multiply this simple action by the 50 U.S. states and the federal government, and you have additional huge savings. The U.S. federal rules for hiring and firing employees weigh 1,080 pounds in printed form, and military sugar cookies demand a 15-page description. Web publishing of all government manuals can reduce costs and make information far more accessible. Digital systems are also better for complex specifications. The government bid requirements for a cargo plane, weigh 3.5 tons in printed form, but the data would easily fit on a couple of CDs. Providing an accessible face to government. An online approach does more than simply reduce paper expenses. Web technology makes it possible for governments to provide a single point of contact for the public, a single online face to structure information according to what is important to the citizen. In several Swedish municipalities, for instance, web pages organize a variety of related services from various levels of government. Citizens can quickly locate tax authorities, national insurance offices, and passport bureaus. They can access minutes from the public meetings and other public documents. They can even get real-time commuting schedules based on sensors in transit vehicles, either via the internet or kiosks. A kiosk is just a PC designed for public use. In the United States, the state of Ohio provides one place on the web for people to see all open jobs in either the public or the private sectors. Australia's state of Victoria is making such a one-stop shopping approach with its Maxi online system. Maxi is organized around life events that change a person's legal status or impose a reporting requirement: marriage, becoming of legal age, moving. If you change residence, for instance, you fill out the change information once from a PC or a public kiosk. The web application automatically updates the records of the 4 state agencies that need to know. Citizens have to know only what they want to do, not the locations and procedures of different agencies. Maxi is handling 20,000 transactions a month and rising. To foster economic development by businesses considering a new location, the Hampshire County Council in the United Kingdom has organized all of the relevant resources in the county, such as office parks, educational institutions, and recreational activities, onto a single website. If you set up such a site to entice people to inquire about your area, be sure to make it easy for them to ask follow-up questions over email. Providing access to every citizen. As the internet provides the best way to interact with government, all citizens need access, even if they don't have PCs themselves. Electronic kiosks that function like bank ATM machines will ensure that every citizen can participate equally in the new way of working with government. Placed in post offices, libraries, schools, and other public buildings, kiosks can help governments improve services while trimming the cost of delivery. The National Government of Australia, for instance, has replaced its system of index cards on bulletin boards with digital kiosks that display job postings. In addition to providing more complete and updated information, kiosks enable the government to provide unemployment services quickly in an area with a sudden loss of jobs, say if a plant closes, without the time required to set up a full office. Online systems, accessible by kiosk or PC, are most useful for citizens and cost-effective for government when they're multi-purpose. Government should review all the transactions that require citizens to stand in line or fill out forms, name, address, ID number. Government should bring together the agencies involved to develop a single system for handling all the transactions. The Irish government, using An Post, the Irish Postal Service, has done this best. An Post kiosks process utility payments, issue passports, issue licenses for vehicles, disburse entitlement payments, offer savings and investment plans, sell lottery tickets from a kiosk system, even sell stamps. Each kiosk is a mini city hall, covering the work of half a dozen bureaus. With many of the 1,000 An Post sites in remote towns having fewer than 2,000 residents, the kiosks serve 1.26 million people each week, half the Irish population, and handle more than $9 billion U.S. in transactions each year. Updating or adding new applications is very easy. For government transactions such as these, as well as for all commercial transactions, security is a prerequisite. Security has two dimensions: protection of personal data while it's in transit over the network, and authentication of the person carrying out the transaction. Encryption technology exists that is strong enough to protect the confidentiality of any electronic transaction on a network, but U.S. export controls on encryption technology restrict U.S. firms from integrating it into their products. Since this restriction hinders honest users without keeping encryption technology out of the hands of criminals, the software industry is working to change the U.S. government position. In practice, the encryption that can be integrated is strong enough that in most cases, the security of data in transit is not the weak link. Electronic data is as safe as data in other forms. Authentication of the user is equally important. You don't want an imposter getting into your government records any more than you'd want an unauthorized person to see your bank account. The need for authentication is why today governments that do online transactions usually limit them to transactions where impersonation would not be a problem, such as renewals of licenses or an automobile registration or the payment of taxes and fines. I don't think people would object if someone pretended to be them to pay their traffic tickets. If someone could impersonate you and see your tax return or vote, though, the public would be in an uproar. Smart cards, which users can swipe on a PC or at a kiosk, are a solution to identity problems, as with an ATM card for a cash machine. Smart cards, combined with a personal identification number, PIN, or similar password, and in some cases, thumbprints or voice prints, will securely identify users trying to access personal information about benefits, taxes, or payment histories, or to initiate a transaction. In Spain, a new kiosk system will let anyone find out general information about social benefits by going through a touchscreen menu, but the person needs a smart card to access any personal information, such as pension amount and status. Though such cards are the equivalent of bank cards used around the world, some people are concerned that the government might collect too much information about citizens. Some nations have privacy laws that prevent a single card or database from containing all information about a citizen, and it is likely that in some nations, two types of smart cards will emerge, one for financial transactions with business or government, and another for health care. Widespread information access and the ability to put a lot of information onto smart cards will cause societies to revisit the question of how information can be used. Should any prospective employer be able to see an applicant's arrest record, or just organizations such as schools, which hire people who work closely with children? How will legitimate requests be distinguished from the nosy neighbor who simply wants the information? Ultimately, these are political questions rather than technological issues. Each country will have to decide on the kinds of personal information that will be allowed on smart cards. Even if their use is restricted to identification only, the streamlining of process and elimination of fraud is well worth the investment. Combined with back-end business systems that immediately post welfare or other payments directly to a central accounts database, smart cards make it very difficult to make fraudulent or duplicate claims. In London, 200 trial kiosks of a system like Ann Post's are credited with reducing welfare payment fraud by £750,000 in the first year. When deployed at all 1,500 post offices, the kiosks are expected to save £150 million per year. Streamlining government the digital way. As governments embrace digital systems, software will streamline processes by having special workflow logic for key functions. Software solutions for the legislative, judicial, and executive branches of any government have recently been created. Legislatures in several U.S. states are using electronic systems to manage the process for drafting laws. Such systems can eliminate the $3 million to $5 million that most states spend every 2 years on printing for bill drafting and revision. PC-based systems can manage the process electronically, can more easily track conflicts within a bill, among multiple bills, or with existing laws or sections of the state or national constitution, and can provide an audit trail of every change to ensure that the final law that is passed is word for word what the legislature intended. These systems make it easy to update web pages, which several states are using to keep the public informed of the status of legislation and committee meetings. For the judiciary, PC workflow systems are enabling courts in the United States and Canada to begin electronic case filings. A typical county court has to place on the docket about 500,000 documents per year, either manually or with clerks entering basic case information into proprietary case management systems. Leon County, Florida, is developing a system so lawyers can file cases directly via email, have all the information transferred to the case management system electronically, and receive a case number in return email. Next, since court filings and most supporting documents are public records, the county wants to publish the documents on the web for the court and the public. Software can also help schedule people for trials. Some U.S. state and federal agencies use digital workflow to manage the scheduling for lawyers and law enforcement officers for court. By reducing the time police spend in court waiting for cases to be called, the application gives police more time on the street. The executive branch of government can benefit as well from software that solves unique government problems. Florida, for instance, requires state agencies to lease space from the state if any state-owned property is available. Florida agencies can go online to specify the amount of space they need and the location, for example, 5,000 square feet in Miami, and see what is available. The Florida Health Department uses PCs to allocate and reconcile costs, such as building leases and staff time, among programs funded by different grants or tax allocations. The system electronically matches bills against program accounts and highlights any discrepancies. The department can reconcile its monthly expenses in a few hours instead of 3 to 4 weeks of manual reconciliation. And different counties and internal departments get a single bill covering multiple programs. The state government of South Australia used to publish 5,000 copies a week of its 50-page government listing of job vacancies. Formal publication was delayed until the booklet could be physically printed and distributed to several hundred remote state offices. Closing dates were held up to ensure enough time for remote applicants to reply by paper. Today, a Microsoft Exchange-based workflow application manages the entire process. Job openings first go via email to legal reviewers and several dozen human resources managers from various agencies who have first shot at filling any openings. If an HR manager puts a hold on the opening for a state employee who wants to transfer, the hiring manager is automatically notified by email so that no one wastes time applying. Remote sites get the listing electronically. If the posting is not filled internally and moves on to a public announcement, the hiring manager receives email describing the newspapers and dates in which the position will be advertised. Though the state expects to save between 50% and 80% of the annual $350,000 Australian production costs with the new system, the main benefit is the speed with which the state can fill jobs while maintaining equal opportunity for people in remote offices. With new digital systems, governments can open their knowledge systems and business operations systems to the public. The German Federal Ministry for Finance is developing document management and electronic archival systems for public records. The project will include automatic document routing and storage, with documents being published automatically on internal or public websites based on classification. Another example in the United States is Massachusetts's online bidding process. Massachusetts publishes all the state bids, all the documents needed for vendors to respond, and the results of all the bids online. Massachusetts's online procurement system not only handles the entire bidding process less expensively, it also helps other public entities buy goods for less. In most states, the cities, towns, and school districts, by law, can get the same low prices from vendors that the state gets. In a paper world, though, it's virtually impossible to find the state's price on most goods. Now, a city or school district can quickly find out the state's best price on the Massachusetts website. Building government systems the digital way. Less developed countries may assume that a digital approach to government is out of reach, but countries without systems can start fresh with new technology, which will be less expensive than manual approaches. Developed countries have older systems that often must be integrated to manage a transition. Leadership examples around the world make it clear that much of the innovation is happening in smaller governments, smaller nations and municipalities, counties and provinces, and the state levels of larger nations. Smaller governments, being less fragmented and less complex, can experiment and deploy solutions on a smaller scale. For larger governments, the lesson is to pilot smaller projects to develop expertise and evaluate citizen response. Put the initial focus on projects that directly touch citizens, and particularly ones that eliminate organizational complexity for the public. King County, in my home state of Washington, is probably ahead of many governments in the amount of information it publishes online, but the county does not yet package information or transactions simply. To get a building permit in rural King County, an applicant has to cull information from many sources: the phone book, phone calls to the county office, 2 or 3 printed pamphlets, and the department's website, a site that makes no mention of separate requirements for a land use permit and a septic permit. A single well-structured website with all the information and links involving all steps in the building permit process would remove most of the complexity and could automate some of the steps. A meeting with a permit specialist would probably still be needed, but applicants would arrive better able to focus on important issues and not on the steps in the process they overlooked. Governments should invest in training managers on business process re-engineering, as several governments have done, to help stimulate consolidated online approaches. Competitive grants can spur projects to streamline internal processes and improve service delivery. Florida has different agencies compete for a limited number of innovative technology projects, bringing an entrepreneurial spirit to play in budget requests. The state balances such investments with a policy of providing some IT services from its central department only to agencies that fund them out of transaction fees or monthly subscriptions. This pay-as-you-go strategy ensures that the state is using its IT dollars for projects that other agencies really want and that have solid cost efficiencies. Cumulative savings from new digital systems would represent a substantial portion of every government's budget. The Pentagon recently found that it was spending more money to process and approve travel vouchers, $2.3 billion, than it was spending on travel itself, $2 billion. For a reasonable and largely one-time investment, an online expense system would free up billions of dollars in costs every year. A billion here, a billion there, pretty soon you're talking real money. As Senator Everett Dirksen of Illinois used to say of federal spending, billions would go a long way against a U.S. budget that annually allocates $27 billion for food stamps, $25 billion for welfare, and $13 billion for public housing. These programs all have enormously expensive paper-based administrative systems that easily consume 30% of the funding. Properly deployed digital systems could drive the overhead below 10%. Citizens, becoming more aware of the power of the web, are no longer willing to accept the idea that government service should be slow or confusing. No consumer would stand in line for 2 hours to get service from private enterprise. Why should a plumber stand in line for 2 hours at a government office and lose 2 hours of pay, when by using the internet he could get his license or pay his fees in a few minutes and be at work on time? Government alone, by building key services around the internet, will provide an enormous incentive for citizens to move to a web lifestyle. If the government, usually the largest business in any country, is a leader in the use of technology, it will automatically lift the country's technical skills and drive the move to an information market. By edict or incentive, it can pull along all the companies that do business with it. Deregulation of telecommunications is probably the single greatest step that a country can take to create a digital economy. Replacing telecommunications monopolies with open competition around the world will stimulate innovation in internet service delivery and will reduce rates, which are high and discourage use in many countries. If a government has policies that are internet-friendly and invests in a high-tech culture, the benefits can be considerable. Costa Rica followed such a course and won a regional competition for an Intel chip fabrication plant. In the first full year of operation, the plant produced $700 million in export revenues, more than either bananas or coffee, the country's largest agricultural crops. Building an information economy will make all the companies in the country more competitive. The information age benefits from having more participants. As more and more countries join in, the importance increases for all countries. World trade will be done digitally. No government can put a fully digital approach in place immediately, but every government can begin now with strong first steps that benefit citizens and make them feel that the government is working for them. The practical guiding principle should be that citizens should never again have to fill out multiple forms or go multiple places to get information. As one government official said in conversation about his new website, which lets people access 100 years of county records online, people can tell when you're trying to help. They know the difference between a government agency trying to help them and one that's just getting in the way. Business lessons. Governments can use the web to create a single face to the public, hiding the complexity of internal departmental organization and dramatically improving service. Citizens, becoming more aware of the power of the web, will no longer accept the idea that government service should be second best. Public kiosks will provide service to people without internet access at home. Governments should publish information on the web as the default, and published printed documents only as an exception. Diagnosing your digital nervous system. Do you have a government-wide email system to help streamline communications and improve intra-agency coordination? Do you use the web to publish government information and provide direct electronic government services to citizens and businesses? Are you starting with technology projects that directly benefit citizens? Chapter 21, When Reflex is a Matter of Life and Death. War is such that the supreme consideration is speed. Sun Tzu, The Art of Warfare. A victory for technology. That's how most people remember the Gulf War of 1991. Cruise missiles hugged the terrain over hundreds of miles to hit heavily fortified targets, and radar-evading stealth fighters dropped smart bombs on communication centers and bridges. For 38 days during Operation Desert Storm, the U.S. military and its allies controlled the air. Flying 2,500 sorties a day with minimal losses, Allied air forces set up the Left Hook ground assault that drove Iraq from Kuwait and ended the war after just 100 hours of ground operations. The high-tech aircraft of the Gulf War had decidedly low-tech mission support, though. In the Persian Gulf, mission orders were written up on an old-fashioned grease board, just as they had been for every air war in the past. Squadron commanders had to manually track which pilots had flown what missions and who was available to fly next. Pilots got face-to-face threat briefings on target locations, the best routes in and out, locations of enemy troops, and the possibility of surface-to-air missiles, ground fire, and other contingencies. Then they retreated for a minimum of 3 hours and usually 7 or 8 hours of mission planning. They'd look up relevant maps in a file cabinet and photocopy and tape maps together. Then they'd walk out distances with a protractor, draw in the route and danger levels with colored pencils, study photos, transcribe intelligence data onto the maps, and calculate the elevations of obstacles. Only after completing this paperwork did pilots go out to fly their dangerous missions. Manual flight planning could cause navigation errors of 1 to 2 miles, a big margin of error if you're trying to locate an isolated target without many landmarks. And if new intelligence came in, the whole flight plan might have to be scrubbed and the process begun all over again. One computer system per unit, about 24 aircraft, was available to help pilots automate some aspects of flight planning, but these computers accommodated only one user at a time, were difficult to use, and frequently broke down, creating bottlenecks in flight support. After the Gulf War, the U.S. Air Force, like all the services, held a Lessons Learned conference. High on the Air Force list for running a future high-intensity air war was better flight planning for pilots flying into harm's way. While some active-duty Air Force personnel wanted to address this need with the military's traditional computer systems, members of the U.S. Air Force Reserve and Air National Guard, who had civilian experience, immediately said, "We gotta do this on a PC." The reservists turned to a number of commercial software developers, as well as to the Georgia Institute of Technology, whose researchers were already experienced with the mathematical models and geographic data sources required for a sophisticated mapping system. The result was Falcon View, a PC-based mission planning system developed in 18 months for about $2.5 million. Falcon View cuts the old manual mission planning process for a standard sortie from upward of 7 hours to less than 20 minutes. It increases planning accuracy through the use of precise digital data and aeronautical mapping tools. And it's affordable enough and easy enough to use that the Air Force has deployed it worldwide. Falcon View became so popular with pilots that they began to ask for additional capabilities. Their requests led the Air Force to embark on a program called Cyber Warrior to bring information technology to all phases of pilot and aircraft deployment, from scheduling to intelligence dissemination to debriefing. The service quickly developed an intelligent scheduling system that tracks pilot assignments, training levels, availability, and special information such as whether a pilot needs to log a night mission to satisfy training requirements. A commander can do a quick search to find candidates for upcoming missions, and pilots can dial in on laptop computers to see when they're scheduled to fly. A PC-based debriefing system helps squadrons reconstruct missions to improve planning for the next mission. Heading off into the wild blue yonder. Instead of sitting down with a paper map and a set of colored pencils, a pilot today sits down with a laptop computer containing digital maps of the world, digital images and updates from military intelligence, and an electronic drawing kit customized for military aviators. The pilot can immediately locate landmarks such as bridges or rivers, plot his route, check safety parameters, check weapons systems information and weapons loads, link to a web-based weather source, and prepare flight plans and maps. Before he flies the mission, the pilot can study mountainous areas or cities to preview what he'll see in the air and get a good idea of the deployment of hostile forces. If the pilot wants to know the elevation of a mountain, he simply clicks on it on his digital map and sees a precise latitude, longitude, and altitude reading, information a pilot used to have to dig up from paper charts. Fighter pilots load the Falcon View pre-mission planning files into the aircraft's computers for use in flight. In addition to providing routine aviation data, such as fuel consumption and takeoff and landing information, Falcon View has a number of specialized features for military aviation. Falcon View data is used in onboard weapon systems for computerized targeting and for checking weapons fusing, whether a bomb is set to explode on the ground or 20 feet in the air. Falcon View does drop calculations that take into account the altitude and speed of the plane, the speed and direction of the wind, even the changing weight and balance of an aircraft before and after dropping its payload. Falcon View can mean the difference between a successful mission and an impossible one. During a tour to the Bosnia Theater, a pilot took his copy of Falcon View along with him to a base in Italy that didn't have access to the software yet. NATO forces had been looking for a particular bridge in Bosnia for 3 days and couldn't find it on their maps or from the air. The pilot fired up Falcon View and located the bridge immediately. They blew it up that afternoon. Falcon View displays satellite imagery accurate to within 5 meters. At the 10-meter resolution of the older system, the bridge wasn't visible. During the Gulf War, the Air Force sometimes had to send 10 to 12 F-16s to hit a single target. With the higher levels of accuracy provided by Falcon View, the Air Force can now send fewer planes to a target. The goal is for one airplane to hit one target. The greater degree of accuracy from Falcon View will enable newer aircraft, such as the B-2 bomber, to attack as many as 16 targets on a single mission, a capability that adds up to big savings in lives and money. "The American people are not willing to accept a single casualty," says the lieutenant colonel in charge of the Falcon View project, "so every little bit of increased accuracy and certainty we can demonstrate is worth a lot." Useful as Falcon View is, a fighter pilot can't carry a laptop in flight. It might not stay in his lap while he's pulling reverse G's. As the Air Force upgrades the avionics computers in its fighter aircraft, though, and as new generation fighter aircraft join the fleet, Falcon View will become fully integrated into cockpit systems and visual displays. Newer planes